Are you in need of assistance? I can assist with my fist in. A little turn and a twist too. Keep my prey at a distance. If we join in arms, we can become more than one. We can pass the torch back and forth, set the world alight as we fight and unite. Ooh, when you're feeling low, you can ooh take my hand. I'll show you to the ooh gold plated finish line. A swift kick and a smile to take them by surprise.
Hello and welcome to Abnormal Mapping, episode 161. I'm your host, Em. With me is my co-host, Jackson.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about video games. Here's the thing that happened. The Keelys happened. And coincidentally, truly coincidentally, it just lined up this way. I haven't played a fucking video game in this month other than the one we're doing for the pod.
Normally, you're like, I've played 6,000 video games.
I played a little bit of Doom 4, and then I got lost in the Foundry, and I haven't gone back since I got lost in the Foundry.
You told me I was playing Doom 4, but I was like, I don't remember being so confusing. And then I was like, yeah, the fucking Foundry level sucks. And you were like, immediately like, yeah, that's exactly where I got lost.
Yeah.
So, cross through time there. The Doom 4 Foundry level, not one of the best.
You picked an RPG, and I had to play an entire RPG, and that ate up most of my time, and then I've been busy with other things. So just, yeah, no games for me this month. A rare occurrence. It's been like 3 years since I went gaming moded, and all I did was play games.
I am continuing to be low on the game just because of physical reasons. I've been reading books instead, which is a bit less stressful on the wrist. But, you know, played Cassette Beasts. It's mostly a turn-based game, so it was fine. Gaming.
You have no other games either? That's fine. I just was like...
No, I was literally, you know, this game was like, how long? 20 hours?
Yeah, about...
And that was mostly crammed. I played a little bit when we started, then mostly crammed it into this week after reading like 5 novels.
Yeah, I've been steadily chipping away at this all month, so.
But yeah, not really, you know, a light segment one. For the first time in about 2 years, no gaming has occurred.
What are you excited about out of the E3 2024?
That new Dragon Quest, got an announcement.
I'm really excited for Dragon Quest 3. Finally, I can play Dragon Quest 3.
Though I do think it's ludicrous that they are putting it out before Dragon Quest 1 and 2.
I mean, the actual answer is they started development before that, right? Like, the plan was not originally to do all 3 games. It's in timeline order. It's like, no, you just decided to do more.
It makes sense in Japan, where Dragon Quest is already known. But if you're trying to get a new audience in the West...
I think the actual answer is they probably were a little taken back by just how excited people were for 3 Remake, would be my guess. And then they greenlit more.
Yeah, I feel like I would deliberately, as part of that green light, like, stagger the release. Even if the development was done, I would just do it the other way so that you could release it in the right order in America.
But I already played one and two, so I don't, if I had to wait for three, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't affect you, doesn't affect me. I've already played all three games. But I'm just saying, I was like, man, Square Enix moment. Similar Square Enix moment is that Dragon Quest III is coming out about 14 days after Romancing Saga 2. Another big remake of an old game that's significantly less popular than Dragon Quest III.
Say, only people sad about this are Romancing Saga fans. No one else on Earth is going to care.
Yeah, I'm like, that one's going to get fucking buried, isn't it? Man, yeah. Shame for that one. Notably absent is that rumored Tactics remaster that everyone's been like, oh, this is final of the year, never happening.
Someone's fighting for their lives to get Blame Yourself or God into the new translation, so.
Yeah, every time I see people talk about it, there's immediately translation discourse, and I'm like, I'm waiting for the release so I can play it. You had a good time playing the PS1 version. It's approachable.
Translation's very bad, but there's some iconic lines that they don't put in the PSP or the iOS version. So
I'll play War of the Lions and then I'll not. I was gonna play War of the Lions with like a hack, with like one of the ROM hacks.
Mm-hmm.
That just like it was like a quality of life hack, and one of the things it immediately did was it lets you control the guest characters so they don't do things like uselessly.
Kind of against the spirit of the game to me, but okay.
Well, then I started it, and then immediately I'm like controlling guest characters, and I have no distinction between my army and guest characters, so there's no like narrative like.
Delita should be like running ahead, getting his ass beat, and passing out every single time.
That's the thing I was trying to stop, but then it's just letting me control Delita, and it's like I got like about 80 minutes in, and I found it so annoying. And I was like, this is against the whole spirit. If I'm gonna play, I'm gonna just play without it.
There's like one or two maps where truly keeping the guest character alive, and you had to in those maps, was like a pain in the ass, and I had a hard time with it. But that's kind of just the experience of playing Tactics.
I assume there's a few points where it is genuinely annoying, but yeah. The aesthetic experience of like narratively separating out your army with it's important. It's the language of the storytelling of the video game.
Yeah. My main thing is they changed some of the requirements in War of the Lions for like classes, where it seems like it expects you to do a little more like fiddly work. Because they know how people play Tactics now, I guess, would be probably the difference. And I'm kind of up or down on that, personally. But
that's why I'm hoping for the... Because I assume the remaster that... It doesn't exist, apparently, but my gut was like, they rebalanced Tactics Ogre to really smooth out a lot of... Like, in the new Tactics Ogre version, I know you level up jobs, not characters, so it's much easier to switch guys around.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know some like fans are like really annoyed because it really does simplify the game. But for me, if you know, I'm just going to play the game for the story. It sounds good to me. So I was always assuming that a version of that would be coming out that'd be very accessible on Steam, very easy. But still has not shown up. I don't remember what else was the show. I'm like, oh, the only thing that I remember the fucking RPGs. But I know there were other cool things there.
Yeah,
there were a couple cool things. There were a couple platformers going around that were fun. I know everyone got really into that demo for. I don't remember the name of the game, but it was that like speed running shooter from Strange Scaffold. It's something beast.
Sure.
terrible bitch here.
I was just excited about UFO 50 finally getting shown. The way Brad on Xlander described it sounded really fascinating. So
can't believe that's real.
Now is it real? It seems way more ambitious than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting just like kind of like here's 50 game design experiments. Like people have done that. There was like that. Was it really just called 50 Short Games? Was it the number less than 50? Do you know what I'm talking about? That old like pack.
Yes,
of, like,
I do remember the big pack. Yes.
Yeah. And I expected something closer to that with a little more production value. Because that was like a real like super indie sort of thing. But Brad was describing like, oh, it's like the full history of like a fake Famicom style console. And it starts with their early work, which is really small. And then like, here's an RPG. And then way laid further down is like, here's a sequel to the RPG that's like built out in ways. And it sounds wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I remember it was that crazy. I've always like had an awareness of it as just like a known project that's coming up along the way.
Yeah, it's like what if here's 50 games of a fake Famicom all at once, and there might be some like the question Vinny had, and Brad was like, I don't know, I only play like five of them, is there like a meta story that emerges out of the video games, like about the history of this console or whatever? And Brad was like, I don't know, you'd think there almost have to be, right? But who knows? Nobody knows.
Like if it all culminates in some...
Well, like, it's like, is there like the story of like this company, not just the games themselves all link into a world, but is there like a story of this company and its developers and rise and fall or whatever that's told by having looked at all this work in their own context with each other, right? In a constellation.
My gut is like, you could absolutely make that. You could make the like extreme YouTube lore ready version of this, but it would be just so logistically hard to do that it like would boggle my mind if that's actually a thing that's real.
Yeah,
I don't even know how you manage that. That'd be crazy.
I was excited. Yes, I was perceiving them describing it. I was like, this is the thing I want to play. It sounds super fascinating.
Yeah,
so
that's really cool. Hopefully I'll be up to playing that when it comes out. The game I was remembering, by the way, was I Am Your Beast, was the big one that was going viral and having the like speedrunner-y first-person shooter gauntlets. It did look cool. That's the other thing, is that like, the shows were bad, generally speaking, but there's a lot of cool video games around still, even as everyone's getting laid off and fired and the whole thing sucks.
Yeah.
But still some good games.
I had a moment where I was like, I know I'm going to get Dragon Quest III on my Steam Deck, because why wouldn't I? But I was like, oh, I could play that on the big screen, on my TV, on my PlayStation 5. I was like, no, you idiot. You'd never play it if you do it that way.
You gotta free yourself from that idea.
You know, I'm going to. Don't get me wrong. It was really funny because I finally watched some gameplay like yesterday, and I was like, "Oh, this is just one of these. It just looks like Octopath 2. It's a level."
Yes,
which is fine, I guess. But there is a distinct like flattening of aesthetic that the HD 2D HD has. That I hope maybe I didn't look at that much. I just saw someone moving around the map, and I was like, "This just looks like Octopath 2." In that moment, hopefully the battles look a little different.
Which game specifically?
Dragon Quest 3.
Oh yeah, I mean that one's like part of the part of this team, right?
Yeah.
Made
by Artdink. They revealed who made it. The continual modern mystery of who the fuck's making these games continues apace.
Artdink's the...
They're the Triangle Strategy people. I mean, Artdink's been around forever, but
Man, they got... They're making some fucking video games. You go look at their thing.
Yeah, I think of Artdink as the A-Train people, but they've been making games forever. So,
because I know that, like, I think Acquire were the Octopath and Octopath 2. So then, Artdink of the who was, and then like the Live Alive team was someone else.
Yeah,
I wonder how that'll continue now that they've announced like we're definitely stopping working with like third-party studios all the time to make our games.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. I hope
I can't imagine they're actually going to... Here's the thing is I just don't believe them that much. I think when they mean that, they can mean no more Final Fantasy Origins, not no more Artdink games.
That's what I hope. I mean, I hope... That's not what I hope. I want Final Fantasy Origin 2, please. Jack Hales 2, the sequel. But I understand that
You'll
we don't
never
live
get
in a
that.
Universe where good things happen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway...
It is very funny that's happening. Like today, the discourse on Saturday, if you're listening to this, going around is who the fuck's making that Mario and Luigi game since they got rid of Alpha Dream? And the Nintendo's been like, some of the old developers are working on it. It's like, oh, you mean all the developers you fired when you dissolved the studio?
They were third party. I don't think Nintendo owned them.
I think by the end, Nintendo owned Alpha Dream.
No, they went bankrupt.
They could have bought them.
So this is my thing. This is my thing with the Alpha Dream going bankrupt thing. Is I remember when it happened, I thought that was crazy. I was like, Nintendo should be getting completely like it. They didn't make any money because it was on the 3DS in 2019. That's nothing. It's not to do with them. It's been a long time studio making good ass video games for Nintendo. I don't care the like terms of their deal. Nintendo should have stepped in and like bought them, or, like, you know, somehow done something to like eat that one because you don't want to lose that team.
Yeah. Well, apparently they hired some of them to make more Mario and Luigi games.
Yeah, but they let the actual... I don't know actually what happened behind the scenes, but I remember when that, like... Alpha Dream taking the hit for, like, Nintendo greenlighting a 3DS game to release in 2019 was so ridiculous. Come on. It wasn't their fault. That wasn't their fault. They were just making the games.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, I think that's it for our segment one, since we didn't have any video games. So we'll hit some music, and then we'll roll into our Game Club game.
Game Club.
Sometimes it takes a friend to tap you, to make you notice all the
Our Game Club game this month is Cassette Beasts, developed by Byton Studio, published on PC and all consoles in 2023.
Yeah.
It went to phones in 2024. I would advise not playing this on a phone, but you know, do what you want, I guess.
Yeah, it got like multiplayer update, had a phone release, and like they had like a whole Cassette Beast Direct, and are doing more stuff later this year. Curious how that'll go. Game Pass day and date game, one of those.
Oh, okay. Byton is based in the UK, which you will know the minute anyone opens their mouth this video game.
I was gonna say, which you can tell by playing the video game. This is a British ass video game.
Yeah. It seems like they only have 3 full-time developers, which is crazy when you think of this game, because this game is this game is a RPG in the style of Pokemon, in that you are a player character that you design that washes up on this island called New World. And in New World, everyone washes up from somewhere. It's kind of like Koholint Island in Link's Awakening, but in this they're all from like different eras of the world. All seemingly all from Earth, though. You get a little deeper and it seems like they might all be from the same Earth, might be from different Earths. On this island, there's like some monsters and some mysterious train stations. And it's as the people are creating a society, it turns out that they can transform into monsters by using cassette tapes. It says earlier on that there was like before cassettes, they used something else to transform, right? It's like the modern version of what they've been doing for like 100 years.
Well, no, they used like technology before. They weren't transforming before.
Tapes are technology.
No, I mean, like, they're using guns and shit, I'm fairly sure.
Right. There's something about the Rangers had, like, they wasn't always this way. It was another way before that.
Yeah. It was another way before, but I'm fairly sure we're just, like, using things they invented to fight them and not becoming the beasts.
Yeah. And you go around, and there's, like, Rangers, which are, like, the gym leaders, but there's 12 of them on a big open world, and you fight them all as you find all the train stations. That the train stations are the big story bosses, which are monsters in various art styles that you fight. And you, every game's a double battle in that you go around and catch guys like Pokemon. But in battle, you and your partner transform into one of the six beasts you carry around. And they can fuse together, to create a big, more powerful, beast, Mega Evolutions. Maybe you've heard of them. And, the game itself is like, while it's like the battles and stuff are all Pokemon style, you know, type advantages and disadvantages, bunch of picking your moves, things like that. The open world is more of a Zelda in which you are jumping and exploring and solving little puzzles on the world map using some traversal abilities you get, and a stamina meter. Breath of the Wild happened, everybody.
It's if you don't put the like circle indicator that goes from green to red as you lose stamina in your game, you will be arrested.
Yeah. And that's basically the structure of the game. You're trying to find a way off the island. Turns out that's a little more complicated than you thought. But you do. You succeed. The end.
I was surprised you succeeded. I spent like half of the game assuming everyone was just dead.
Oh, really?
They're still talking about like how they're dead, and no one like remembers the moment they go back. And I thought it was just like an afterlife situation, and then they all just go back at the end. I was like, okay, never mind then.
Yeah, no, some of them were never alive to begin with.
Well, you don't know how the multiverse works.
I mean, specifically, what's her face? Viola is a fictional character.
Yeah, but maybe you're a fictional character and someone else, you don't know.
Well, yes.
You know, but yes, one of the party members is like from Twelfth Night.
Yes. One of your beasts is like someone's notebook scribble. It's a Gilmon. Gilmon is a beast you can capture in the game, basically. But yes. She's like a really cringe anime angel cat girl.
She's so cringe. It's pretty funny.
Anyway, you picked this one because you were just interested in trying one of the Pokemon likes, right?
Yeah, I had heard this game spoken of pretty fondly from like people in those circles. I have always been like, I like Pokemon games, but I wish they did more with the battle system. And I knew this was double battles. Ended up it being significantly less Pokemon than I expected, right? Like I say, the whole overworld structure is more Zelda. Even in battle, it's like got just as much in common with like Shin Megami Tensei stuff than Persona than does necessarily Pokemon.
I mean, I would love it if Pokemon was this setup heavy base, because so much of the game is about using all of your moves to like a change of status effects or like build walls or buffs and debuffs to then when you do attack, it goes real bad.
Yes. The base mechanics, right, of the battle system, which I guess where we'll start, because I think it's the most genuinely impressive thing here, is like, you got a type chart. It's like a Pokemon type chart. There's a few less types, but it's not
there's a lot less types. There's like 7 types or something? 8?
Yeah. So it's much easier to hold in your head, but it's not, like, there are a couple types that are weak to other types, like damage multiplier-wise, but it's mostly just status effects, a lot of bespoke status effects that do different things, and they really push the limit of what a status effect can be. Like, just affecting variables I didn't consider could be affected in, like, turn-based combat design. It's really inventive. It's fucking incredible. The battle system is so good. And that was the part that I was the most, like, super impressed with. I thought that was, like, truly above my wildest expectations. I was very happy. I was delightful.
Oh, there's way more than I thought. There's 14 types.
Yeah, there's still types. Yeah. They got types in this game.
But it's like stuff like my lead, my starter, the beast you pick, I picked an astral type, because it can kind of go either way. You get either astral or what's the other? Sweet. Is it glitter?
Sweet.
Yeah, but if you, it's like spooky or sweet, and the astral type is what I got. What typing was yours? Was it glitter?
I don't know. I ended up with metal, so.
Oh, okay. Mine was astral the entire time, so maybe it was just metal for a sweet.
I could have. I think it's because I specifically evolved it to be metal. I was just kind of it'll eventually, I'll say, like, do you want to remaster into this or this? And I just picked one. I wasn't like thinking. I wasn't looking this up.
But because my main beast was astral, anytime I was hit with an element like fire, water, whatever, I would just gain an AP boost buff on my moves. And anytime I was hit with a like man-made object type, which is like plastic or poison or whatever, I would take an AP like drain buff where I'd gain one less AP every turn. So I was constantly being shoved in an AP direction throughout, because I just basically always, it was like the most powerful thing I had the entire game. So
I was like, my strategy involves switching between, like, because you can get moves like stickers that which are your move equivalent here, and you set up your various tates with stickers, and you can get like, it's, there's a lot of switch in stickers.
Yeah.
So you can really build around like a switching in to like, all right, if I launch with this and I switch out to this, then I'll have 3 turns that'll hit like all, like both of the enemies. Mm-hmm. So I was really building around the status effects that allowed me to do multi-hits and multi-target. And that was kind of how what I built around in the end is my primary thing. I did make one pivot from that at the late game where that one boss that made you sleep happened, and I was like, this is impossible. I can't beat, because the game doesn't really have that many, I would say, hard skill checks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you gotta know what you're doing, but they're mostly broad enough that so long as you're like strategizing generally thoughtfully, you don't have to like, here's a hard thing that I have to, like, by hard I mean like rigid, right? Like, here's a thing that requires a specific solution, and if you can't stop that guy casting sleep, you can't do anything. You lose that battle instantly. Yeah. And I was just like, what the fuck am I meant to do? Until I realized like I could just put taunt on both my guys and immediately cast him with taunt so he couldn't do anything but attacking moves. And then that became like a real clutch thing, as like putting guys in berserk status constantly so yes, they could never use status effects on me. That was a real clutch move for me.
Because my astral type would get berserked by man-made objects, I was open with like the sharpen, which boosts my melee, and then basically would almost always get berserked, and then it's fine because I'm already set up, don't worry about it.
Yeah. So there's just so much like setup and thinking about like if I do this, I can transition into this, which will get me into this. Like if I,
yeah,
it's really fluid with types. Also, there are many moves that can like inflict types on others that can switch your own type. There are types that just like if you attack plastic with fire, they become poison, right? Stuff like
yes.
that.
And then there's also a lot of the, because every beast learns 8 moves, and then the stickers are, you can just peel them off. So you can literally like, any beast you're not using, you just take off all their stickers and put them in your pool. And then you can't slap every type on everything, right? But a lot of the moves are typeless. And instead of being like a normal type, it just adapts whatever type the beast is. So there's a lot of moves that you can just, if you find this move useful, you can just slap it on anybody. And it'll be like, oh, this was a fire move and now it's an electric move, but it does the same thing.
Right, but it also means that mid-battle, if your type gets switched, you're no longer doing electricity damage.
Yes, yeah.
And so, like, there's just so much more things to consider.
Yeah, there was, I don't know if you looked at, like, the speedrun strat for this game, which is basically...
No, I didn't watch the GDQ video in the end.
Turn every boss into glass type and then inflict them with resonance, which if you get hit with resonance 3 times, if it's like a build-up status, if you get hit 3 times with resonance, you instantly die. It doesn't matter what, it just kills you. And so it's just turn every boss glass and hit them with resonance until they die.
I have tried I never got a resonance kill, though I had like one.
I was killed with resonance before. The first time I saw it, I was like, what's this thing? I don't care. I'm just going to brute force my way through.
It
fucking destroyed.
A big pop-up that says, if you are attacked
sometimes,
with this.
Sometimes I did not read those.
And you can press the back button at any time to read status effects.
Sometimes you just Vinnie Caravella your way through a problem.
That's so true.
And you cast Bufu 45 minutes into your boss fight, and someone almost strangles you.
Yeah, and so I had, like, generally speaking, delightful time with the battle system in this game. I found it, like, super exciting. I think my biggest issue is just, like, UI stuff. It's a little unwieldy to, like, move moves between, like, I'd like loadouts. I'd like, you know, hey, things I'm complaining about in every RPG, I'd like it just to be easier to do the menuing.
I would like to be able to move. I shouldn't have to go to my party menu, deposit into the box, and then go into the box and then take guys out of the box. I want that all to be one interaction.
Yes. I want all party and move related stuff to be in as few screens as possible that I can just like go between.
Yeah.
I understand some of that friction is probably intentional. So you're like, if you make it annoying to do, you're less likely to just set into optimal solutions for every battle. So you have to like think on your feet a little more.
Yeah.
Maybe that was why some of the decisions were made. However, I'll still sit here and say, these are the things that annoyed me in the video game, right?
I also would like to know if things had another evolution or if they're capped out, because you don't really know unless they don't evolve once they hit 5 stars again. Because I was, by the end of the game, I kind of had my 2 guys who were just my MVPs, and I just rolled them. It's like my companion's main and my main, and everyone else was just kind of getting leveled, because like the level doesn't matter. It's more about like, I just wanted to see what some of the evolutions were. And so I'd drag guys out and I'd be like, they'd hit 5 stars. I'm like, oh, they don't evolve. I didn't realize it was a 2-stager. I thought it was going to be a 3-stager.
And there's like, there are specific requirements for certain evolutions as well.
Yes. Yes.
Remasters and stuff. I think that's not too much of an issue, because the game, the base campaign, is mostly pretty easy.
Yeah.
Apart from the like, that's
weird
that
gimmick
one
bosses
boss.
That will kick your ass. Yes.
Yeah. And apart from the final dungeon, where it's just suddenly like, oh, we're already fucking in it now. But there's only a few man. Like the final boss itself is fine, but the
dungeon sucks.
Yeah, the chess pieces you have to fight are really annoying.
I was avoiding as many of those as possible by then.
There are only 2 mandatory fights if you do them that way.
Yeah.
Which I may have been trying to. I had to fight a couple more, but I was like, oh, this is really pushing the limits of it. I hadn't like optimized enough. But I think it's meant to be like a smooth ramp to like allow you to like understand it. They don't want you, because the problem is if it was too hard early on, you would like initially, because you could basically beat anything at a very low level, because levels matter so much less than.
Oh, it's weird because the game is like really, because you're kind of kicked in the open world, and there's a couple traversal things which are pretty hard locked, but there's like ways around some of it. Like there are areas at the beginning where like my partner's like, we shouldn't be here right now, because there's areas you can just kind of wander in that are way over leveled. And early on, especially when you don't have that many moves, you can easily get your ass beat by just random guys if you're under leveled.
Oh yeah. But I still like beat like some of the bosses where I was like 15 levels below them.
Yes, absolutely.
Just because I understand how my statuses work, and then take a few more rounds, but you know,
one of the train station guys I didn't find where it was until way later, and it was like significantly lower level than me. Kicked that guy's ass.
I got destroyed by someone who was like, I forget specifically which one it was, but there was definitely someone who, they were level 10 and I was like level 35 by the time I found them, and I still lost just because of the way the status works. Levels, yeah. they do matter. The stats are real.
Yeah.
But the system is so much more malleable because of all the various status effects and things you can do.
Yes.
And also, like, one of the base moves that a lot of monsters have, and you're going to put the stick on almost every guy, is elemental wall.
Oh, you know what? I did not use basically this entire fucking game, elemental walls. No time for that.
What the hell? How did you not just die all the time?
I bought a lot of healing items.
Oh, did you just put all your fusing things into the healing pouch?
Yeah.
I never used, I'm going to be honest, I did not use a single one of those. I was like, maybe I'll get the save up for the gym pass. Maybe I'll use something else. I had base.
No, I bought the upgrades to your traversal moves. So like if you ran into guys with like speed shoes, they'd automatically take fire damage and get burn effects on them when you start a battle, which is great. Love that. And then I basically bought healing, like capacity upgrades and catch upgrades.
That would be very useful.
But it was like, I ran with basically two glass cannons. And I was going back to like the bonfire, like every two battles a lot of the time. So,
yeah, I mean, I do think one thing that like this battle system, is not really designed for wars of attrition. It's not really a dungeon crawling battle system.
No,
you can get a few encounters in, if you're like really thinking it through, but you're always going to take some hits. It's much more about the like boss fights and gym leader fights.
Unless you just invest in being ghost guys, because there's like a status effect you can give yourself called ghost, where you just can't get hit by more. There's like a couple things that can hit ghosts like deliberately, but mostly you are just immune from damage for three turns.
That's true. You can build in all kinds of ways. That's the other thing. Is it like I could play this game six more times and just like do different.
Yeah, I totally could just play it differently. Yes, I was like, oh, there's all sorts of like what you'd consider like a gimmick Pokemon team that are like really fundamentally accessible options in this game.
And like you can do that in Pokemon, but no, you can't because the gym leaders are all like the
yes.
The elements are both more bespoke, but also not, it's not just like to beat the water gym, you need the grass gym, the grass yeah. Pokemon, right? There's a binary nature to the way that type systems work in Pokemon that this game just completely laterally avoids, which makes the types both more powerful but also less mandatory. You can think your way through type weaknesses, even though type. I don't know how it hits that balance in that like I find the type so much more important, yet they're not like as like cut and dry and binary about it. It's good. I don't know, I was just like incredibly impressed with the battle system.
Yeah, my secondary was like my partner's Pokemon, or not Pokemon, my partner's beast, which was like a cat with a TV for a head, like an electric thing. And its whole thing is that it had a move where like if you did the setup attack, like you did like a charge, then your next big attack would automatically do critical hits. So then I gave her the ability to let critical hits generate AP, and then I gave her the ability to dump that AP into my other part, into my a beast, because I was building up to early on I'd bought, because there's like you can buy stickers, and I was like, oh, there's this one that's like 1,000 cloud, and I was like, I have almost 1,000 cloud, and I ground out 1,000 cloud to buy it. Turns out that's like the final move that thing learned, and it's like last like star move, whatever. So I ended up with multiple of them by the end of the game, but it's just called last rites. It just does 200 damage. It's just like hit your 200 damage, fuck you. And I would just dump AP in to do that over and over again. It's a great way to beat
game. Then you can just fucking win.
It was really good.
I was much more about, I was doing multi-shot from the it was like a big metal dragon-y guy, the evolved form of the bullets, the little
guys. I know which one you're talking about.
And my other, my partner was always using, I forget the name of it, but it was a poison one. And Toxic Bite was the move that I was on. The four pips, Toxic Bite, and I would try to get that, like, to double up, if I had enough AP, and I would almost always have the enemy poisoned and burned, so I was always getting a few ticks. Mixed in Meredith Sada in there with the electricity one, because if you can get multiple guys conducting, they'll just bounce back and forth. That one's great. So that's kind of, it was a bit of a mishmash of my team, but I deliberately didn't ever look anything up until like very specific moments late at the end. But I didn't want, like, this is the other thing. Pokemon's a solved game, and they're so similar that they've been all future Pokemon games are solved until they decide to change them, right? And I didn't want that. I wanted to just like kind of muddle through. I trusted.
I never looked at battle system stuff. I just that is like my way of like. The way I was going to just kind of brute force my way through the battles, I looked up a couple things like, where do I find the? Because at one point early on, I was like, oh, I need to start finding these partners faster than I'm finding them. So I made sure to find, like, beeline to them and do that stuff.
I didn't find Viola till about 17 hours into this 20-hour game.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, also, I mean, this is the story stuff, but I didn't find, like, the dog till like, right by the end because he's on the fucking mountain.
Yeah. And say, like, about halfway into that, I was like, I need to make sure I grab everyone. And so I grabbed everyone really early.
Yeah. And then, like, the game's really open with its structure. You're just kind of finding things and doing them.
Yeah. But you do have to get all the partners, most of, if not all the partners, to see the end, because the partners have the Archangels at the end of their quests.
Yeah. It's not 100%, but yes, like, well, I don't actually think that's true, actually. You can probably beat the game without the partners. I don't know. I haven't tested. I've got all the partners, but like, I'm fairly sure that if you just go to the, if you get like three clues of the song and know where the gate is.
Oh, sure. But like the main part of the video game is beating all the Archangels, right?
Yes.
And to do that, you need the partners to find all the Archangels. Yes. You could totally like luck your way into the final dungeon. I'm sure there's speed runs around kind of getting just enough clues to point you in where they might probably is and then doing that. But like the part where you're like, fighting all the rangers, the like gym leaders, that does not matter to the plot really necessarily.
No, I assume that one doesn't even need to be finished. Yeah.
But it's a great way to like check your progress and get you a bunch of experience and fusing materials and stuff like that.
Yeah, the game walks on a loop around going back to the main town, Harbor Town.
Yeah.
Getting a few like rumors, which is like basically you have some like broad quests, right? That will point you to a general idea of what to do, and then rumors will give you specific points to things happening on the Link's Awakening grid that is the open world map.
Yes.
And often these will direct you to like sub parts of the individual quests.
Yeah.
But that I like that little bit of distance because it means that, like, you don't have to go back to town. You can remember like in the quest with the anime girl at all the what are they called, the what's the word, where's she hanging out at, the like,
oh, the shrine,
the altars.
Yeah,
I was like, I just forgot the word altar there, sorry. But if you like, oh, there's one of those by the church. Yes. It's on the left side. You don't need to go to town to be directed.
No,
that.
I just remembered where those were, went back to them more or less, because I've been wondering what the fuck they did for like half the game.
Right, because you keep coming across them, you're like, where, what are they doing? And also stuff like, you, I never went in that church, by the way. I never figured out what that church was doing.
Oh, so you can go around the back and there's like a path up, like you drop into the ceiling and there is just a rare like stained glass beast in there that you can capture. That's really cool. Okay. It's like a mini boss fight. And then I assume it's like the equivalent of like a legendary.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because the church was one of the few things I was like, I've done all the main quests. I've got all of the party members. I've got all of the gym leaders. I'm basically done. What's in the goddamn church?
It's called Glass Stain. Here you go. Here's the Glace Stain. It looks really cool. It was really hard to fight, so.
Oh, this one is cool.
Yeah.
This one rules.
Yeah. Apparently once you see it, then more of them will just be around the map.
Oh, thank you.
Because the game is very generous about
everything.
Yeah, not a lot of bullshit, you know?
Yeah, they've really, like, taken a look at what are the things people complain about. Well, they complain about TMs. Fuck TMs. What are they complain about, like, missing, like, missables, right? Missables are basically not a thing in this game. Probably a couple, I assume. I haven't, like, looked at literally every single thing.
Well, literally, once you get... I think it's once you beat all the rangers, you can just buy the other starter or duplicates of your starter from the shop, from the gym shop.
It's so convenient. Thank you.
Because like your starter can, it branch evolves. And also you start out and you get an option of like spooky or sweet. And I pick spooky and you pick sweet. But like even from there, it goes into a couple different directions. So getting multiple so you can fill out your fucking index, you know, is nice. Because no breeding or anything.
Because I mean, the game's not built around like trading, right? There's no trading. Yeah. It's a single player game.
There's multiplayer, but it's always about you fighting raid battles with other players.
Right, but like it's a normal indie game that's not it's not like trying to sell an ecosystem of products that you can buy.
Yeah.
It's just a video game. And is very much designed to like target the frustrations people have. I didn't start capturing everyone. In fact, I barely captured monsters at all. I only captured when I needed guys because I could already build, like, I already evolved the guys I had. Evolving felt like an investment.
I would try to capture guys while I was out in them. If I hadn't seen them before, I'd try to grab them. You know, if I didn't, I wouldn't like hunt forever. I wouldn't make sure I get every guy in this area. But like, I ended the game with about 90 guys.
Oh, I was like 40 guys.
Because collecting guys is the easiest way to get the fused material, which is like the best currency, because there's a guy who checks your Pokedex basically, and every 10 gives you like 10 fused material. So
yeah, I wasn't struggling. So I mean, I wasn't spending the fused materials on anything. So
yeah, you weren't buying the uncaps that I was buying.
No, apparently I should have been doing that. But it wasn't. It was never. I was always like, oh, what if I feel pressured to start buying these, and it never became a problem. Because a lot of it is also designed for, like, now, I don't know, because I didn't play it, right? I have not played the post-game, but I get the sense that there is a significant post-game.
Yeah.
And I can see how, from just engaging with the main campaign, the battle system can support it. I could totally see how these ideas could be taken to such an extreme. One of the examples being the bootlegs, which are the shiny equivalents, are other types.
Yes.
And you can also get different moves of different rarities that, like, just basically have better versions of moves, which would fucking break Pokemon, because it's a competitive multiplayer game. But for your single-player RPG, where you need a big ramp for, like, presumably progressively harder super bosses and endgame challenges, that makes a lot of sense to me. I've played the game, you know, through to credits, did everything pre-post-game, but I have not engaged with that yet, though I very much see in the design here how you could do all those things, though I don't know how they, like, what form they specifically take.
But yeah,
I assume that's all there, because it's shockingly
A lot of it seemed like it was like notice boards lead to quests to like do more of the raid battles, which gets you way more materials. Also, you start getting a currency that like guarantees bootlegs out of the raids, which are the like the shiny equivalent, but instead of just being a different color, they're also a different type than typical. So it's like, here's your, you know, here's the traffic cone crab, but instead of being plastic type, it'd be metal type or whatever it is.
Yeah. And you get introduced to that by like the dog you get.
Yes, has one.
Has a version of a fire dog.
Yes.
And so that, like, there's like 100 and how many beasts are there in this game?
They're about 130.
Yeah. So like not a massive amount. Most types only have a couple of monsters, but because the types are so variable, like in battle and also out of battle.
Yeah.
That means that like the spectrum for what you can do with the building is wild, to the point of they did the names and the sprites so modularly that they can all procedurally combine.
Yeah, so you can fuse with your partner, so whatever beast you're on and whatever beast your partner's on fuse together, and in doing so create a beast that is like, because the parts are combined, the names are combined, and because there's like 130 and they all combined in which direction, which one you are versus which one your partner are, actually changes what the fusion is. There's like 19,000 fusions.
This was the part where I was like, there's no the how.
Well, when you just do it programmatically, right? Like, it's just like, which, like, to be fair, makes them a little less special. There's some people, like, in the comments of the video and all the fusions, I just kind of scrubbed through to look at, like, how varied they were. There was someone who's like, that's why this game sucks, because it's all just, like, you know, you just have the computer do it, and nothing's unique, and everyone's just the same kind of style of guy, and they all look kind of the same, they all have kind of the same name, and it's like, well, yeah, it's not fucking Pokemon. They don't have Nintendo money.
Also, that's not true about the actual, like, that's only true for the fusions, which are a, like, fuse mechanic, right? They are meant to be combining guys in weird, fun ways. They're not, like, mega forms, right? They're not, like, special bonus design things. I think the creature design, both, like, we talked about the battle system, but the aesthetics and also just the naming, pretty good. For terms of, like, fake Pokemon, like, pun names, I would say a pretty decent hit rate. You can go real bad, real fast, trying to do your comedy Pokemon names.
Yeah.
But, like, you got a fish in a tank where the tank has legs, and it's called Pondwalker.
I love that guy. That guy is, like, one of the... He might be my favorite beast. There's, like, a couple that I think are, like, just design-wise, like, oh, these are fucking cool. Even if, like, the names sometimes... There's one that's, like, there's one that's, like, a weird, like... He's like a waiter. He's like a ghost waiter. And he's called Gin and Tonic. Like D-J-I-N-N and then E-N-T-O-N-I-C, which is like a bad name for a really cool guy. He looks like a fucking earthbound enemy. Did you see this guy? I'm sure you've seen this guy.
Yes, I saw Gin and Tonic.
Yeah.
Was that too stupid for you?
The name was bad, but like this guy looks like he fucking fell out of Foresight and Earthbound. I thought he was very cool. I think the like character designs are like a lot of them are very strong because they are not trying to be animals for the most part. They're weird things.
Yes. I mean, this game, it surprised me how much like is very clearly more in touch than I am for certainly sure who's like played a couple of these, but like clearly is unaware of the like RPG maker is too small a term, but like the indie RPG scene of things that I see occasionally, right? Uh-huh. Like the fucking Yume Nikki ass bosses that show up, there's weird things in different art styles. Is you know, Undertale's all built on that, doing that constantly. Yes. Those are just my obvious reference points of like I've only dipped my toe in, right? I only dipped my toe into the sphere, so I don't know beyond the obvious ones.
Yeah.
And even I'm like, oh, this is clearly in touch more than I am with this space and sphere. And I'm surprised at how strong that influence was, like, over just, we're doing fake Pokemon, which is the vibe I get from, like, Temtem or whatever.
Yeah. But also, Temtem is, like, an intense grinding survival simulator. And this game, weirdly, has, like, it looks like it has, like, 17 currencies, and it does, I guess. But, like, it's not a crafting game. Like, there's a couple shops where you do have to exchange stuff you collect, but the numbers are just weird. The numbers look like you're, like, gonna be making fucking Minecraft, because it's like, oh, I've got, like, 1,000 wood. And then every time you rest at the thing, it's like, this costs me 14 to 30 wood for some inexplicable reason. And you just get it from every battle. It's just fucking weird the way the numbers are. The numbers seem so off for what the game is.
I assume the currencies would make more sense in that, like, you get this to do the raid, to do this, to get currency. Because they are all spent on different things.
Yes.
Like, they just get you different kinds of rewards.
Well, it's like, a lot of them are, like, different sticker shops have different, like, currencies for what they do. But also, because you get stickers just from ripping them off of guys, I was, like, drowning in stickers for every move possible. At no point did I go, oh, I don't have this thing. I wonder if it's in the shop. I just always had, if I need this move because I'm going to build a weird thing, I always had it.
You get so many stickers. Plus, you can then, like, if you don't want the sticker, you can mount it down to, you know, wall or other resources. So
yes.
You're always able to get more. There was not, like, it definitely presents like you're going to have a lot of levers to pull, right? To, like, get currencies to do more things in an RPG, numbersy, modern survival type way.
Yeah.
And there's none of that. It's kind of a very grinding light game. You just kind of find out the next place to play to go to, and then do it. And if you're not quite powerful enough, generally a little, you know, slightly mix up your team, mix up stickers, and that's usually enough. There was no point where that wasn't enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it just ended up being, like, way more gentle about that stuff than I was expecting. Focusing more on just, like, exploration and winning battles and, you know, playing the RPG part, which is good, because that's what I want to do, right? Like, I always hate when I'm bogged down with a bunch of mechanics on top of, like, the main core of your game, and I think this is really good about focusing most on the core. I think the addition of, like, instead of putting HMs on Pokemon to get moves that allow you to traverse the world, it's you, by you capturing guys who have specific moves, you just get the ability to do them. Like your glide and your electricity power that you use to like hook onto things and your run fast moves are all based on catching beasts that have those abilities inherently. I think that's really neat.
When I caught the first one, I was like, oh, I can't lose this guy from my team because I won't be able to dash anymore. But no. You just get him. You just get him, and then you know, it doesn't matter. You could like disintegrate the tape. It wouldn't matter. You've unlocked the thing, and you've got it permanently.
Yeah. Which is great, because once you have all that stuff, you can start moving around more. Like, it's just fun to go through the world. I think the world's interesting. I like all the little puzzles. There's a lot of, like, Breath of the Wild style, like, here's just a little thing. Here's, like, a chest that's locked, and here's, like, a couple rocks, and if you put the rock on the space, it'll clearly unlock a thing, and it does, and you get a couple materials and a sticker. And, like, those are just fun to do, even if the rewards aren't that worth it.
Yeah, I thought the world stuff was very well balanced. They always take, like, about 90 seconds maximum.
Yes, and there aren't that many, because the world's way, it's not Breath of the Wild big, right? The world's way smaller. So by the end, like, I'd explored every tile, and, like, I haven't opened every chest or anything, but, like, I felt like I had explored a good amount of the space in the video game.
Yeah, because the world, like I said, Link's Awakening was my go-to in terms of, like, considering the squares.
Yeah. The one complaint I had is you start with a woeful amount of stamina in the game, which dictates how much you can, like, sprint. And once you get the traversal abilities, how much traversal ability you can do, how much you can stay in water. And you get more for every Archangel you fight a little bit. But I immediately discovered that, it's very easy to access the console if you're playing on PC or Steam Deck. And I just loaded up the console and gave myself, like, 10 times the stamina. Much better game the minute I did that. I had a much more fun time.
I had, like,
I told you about this literally when I started the game. I was like, here's the console command, please give yourself, like, 20 stamina instead of the 2 you start with.
You know what, you did say this, but then I didn't do this, because I spent that, because I didn't load up the console until I had to do the like, the give myself the romance point.
I played for, like, an hour and a half, and I was like, I'm going to have a bad time if I can't run fast in this. And I was like, is there a cheat? Is there mods? And I found the console command, and it was easy to just change your stamina. I recommended the Discord do this also. If you play this game, fucking mod your stamina.
I just simply got into the rhythm of, this is how long I have to hold my sprint for.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
And because your stamina upgrades, that you lose the rhythm with every upgrade.
You say, I'm still upgrading. It just never mattered very much when I upgraded.
That's so funny. That's so funny. You did tell me that, but I just played it straight.
Yeah,
It was ended up being fine. I did get used to the rhythm, but that would have been so much less irritating.
Yeah. If there's a part of a game I distinctly don't like, I'll just try to find a way around it. This one was very easy, so thanks for having a good, easy console to use in your video game, Seppies. I appreciate it.
Yeah, the console's super useful. Apparently, it's really helpful for mod testing, obviously.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I haven't even looked into the mod scene.
Yeah.
But, like, I know, like, they've got a whole permadeath mechanic that's in that situation. Like, it's specifically in the console itself.
Yeah, that's cool. Does it just destroy your tape if you die? Then
I don't know. I don't know exactly how it all works, but I assume it'd be something like that. But, like, there is systems there that are like, oh, if you want to do your Nuzlocke situation, you can just do that, like, through these.
That's
these
cool. This would be
systems.
A brutal game to do a Nuzlocke with.
Yeah, that's probably why it's a hidden option in a console for modders to, like, mess about with, rather than a fully featured system, because the game's just too hard, and not actually hard, but hard to keep everyone alive.
Yes. Sometimes you just don't have a hard counter and you eat shit and you die.
The game's about spending resources efficiently. It's not about, like, perfectly preserving, like, food.
Yeah.
Like, perfect team balance. You can do that, but I don't think that would be enjoyable. I think, like, the push and pull is part of the fun.
Yeah.
It's just not as binary as a Pokemon, like, building out a team.
Yeah.
Basically, every single battle on you and your enemy side, you're both going to have multiple status effects on your monsters at any time.
Sometimes it stacks up to truly ludicrous amounts.
And then you're like, there are so many times where I truly miss the part where in Pokemon you can load up a guy with status effects and then switch, and then you're like, haha, new guy, fuck you. No, they stay. The status effects are on you because you're transforming. So you can't transform out of status effects. Sometimes that's useful, and that you can use things to set up on one monster and then use them on another. I was using that all the time. But sometimes it's like, I really need to get rid of these, like, 7 like, poison ticks.
Yeah. Well, that's why you uncap your healing items and you just have healing items.
Yeah, clearly. I need to get rid of all these sleeps on this one boss.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the battle system stuff.
Yeah, so story stuff. This is a modern indie game, so it's a little too cute and too funny for its own good sometimes. But I think I was mostly fine.
I thought the story was okay. I was like, there are parts that I don't like. It didn't hit with me that, like, hard. because I'm just kind of not the target audience. We're kind of like grumpy old communists on some level.
Well, yeah, one of the enemies is like the Earthbound Happy Happiest cults, but they're like landlords who want to develop the island, and they're like vampires because landlords are vampires. And like, and the game really underlines that joke multiple times. And I was like, I get it. It's fine.
That's fine. Yeah. Just nodding. And so, like, I feel bad doing too much criticism because, like, if the developers find this episode and listen to me, don't listen to me. I'm not the target.
Yeah, no, it was fine. There's stuff I actually really like in the story, and some stuff that like just isn't for me or whatever. Whenever you fight a weird beast in the beast in a different, or like the archangels in a different art style, that stuff hits for me a lot. I think that stuff's really good.
Yeah, that's like, I wish they had pushed even further with this. Like, they could do, like, my favorite one was the weird like puppet monster, like the first big skull guy, like plastic guy.
Oh, yeah. I like the ones that are like pencil, like little pencil. There's one that's like a PS1 low poly kind of guy.
Yeah.
They're very cool.
That stuff is just great. Loved all that stuff.
Yeah. But then a lot of it's in the like the Rangers, which don't actually have that much personality. They tend to just be like a character design gimmick, but then your companions, which all have like a storyline, like a relationship meter that builds, and the storyline you explore with that stuff about how they landed here and what their whole deal is, because they're all from different times and they all have different like views on stuff. And yeah, some of them are cool and some of them fucking suck.
I was kind of underwhelmed by that. So like, specifically, I want to destroy the influence of Persona on RPGs in one specific way, which is I don't like the kind of, like, you sit down with a character, they say their problems at you, you choose one dialogue option, they go, wow, you've really helped me see my problem through. And that's every single Persona social link, and now it's everywhere. And it's just a mode I don't like, generally, in the video games. I'm fine with side antagonists, but that specific form is, like, as the way of doing relationship stuff in RPGs, is just not a preferred form.
I don't know how you scope anything else in a game this size. Like, you can't have companion quests of the... I mean, you do this in the first time you meet someone, which is the important one, you get a full-on companion quest, but the rest of their stuff is typically just, you know, build up the relationship meter, you get a little another scene as they talk to you about what their deal is, and at the end, they're like, do you want a kiss? And you say yes or no, and you can reach level 5, and that's it.
I mean, I would rather just have... I think the structure's fine, but I would rather have, like, a voiced protagonist, and I'd rather have... Well, not voiced, like, you know, text. I'd rather have a non-silent protagonist, and I'd rather have just story... I don't want them all to be... all 5 of the stories are just romances, and I'd like a little more variety in, like, the party of an RPG.
There's 6 companions. One of them is not a romance.
Okay, so here's the funniest thing about this game is that one of the things they lean on is that fusing. It's kind of like sex. Did you know? We fuse. I've never fused with anyone before. It's really intimate. And so I went from like a scene with Meredith. He's my favorite party member. I like Meredith quite a bit.
Meredith is the one I ended up with too. We're both cartoons in this way, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's kind of obvious, you know. Oh, we're not gonna be like, oh, you know what, I kind of like Eugene. Look at us, obviously. It's like, we're very predictable.
Eugene's the worst one. Fuck Eugene. All the homies hate Eugene. Eugene's whole thing is Eugene. I want to be a cop.
But he's specifically like, oh, I came from the commune and I'm not cool enough to be a cop.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Meredith's like, I'm here in the multiverse to get records. I want rare records. I was like, well, you're the coolest one.
Yes. I was all about Meredith.
Felix is the one who made the Gilmon. He was cool. But I was already like settled on Meredith because before I found Felix, and I was like, it would have been you, but it's not you, unfortunately.
I finished the Meredith scene. I had the like Meredith romance scene where you like make out watching the movie, and then like about 2 minutes later, ran up to the mountains and immediately fused with a dog. And I was just like, you went so hard on the fusing as sex metaphor, and then I'm fusing with a dog 2 minutes later, which, to be clear, not problematic, mostly just funny. I was like, that's hilarious. Just a thing that was just not thought through. I would probably have not... especially, I don't know why it's fused with the dog, because they lean on the fusion being like the, you know, Kingdom Hearts is light, it's the bonds that bring humanity's potential together, and there's just also a dog there, which is, you know, it's nice to have a dog party member. It is very funny. It doesn't like mess with the metaphor of the game at all.
I probably would have just, I mean, this is just a small game, right? But I probably would have just diverse, where like some characters view it as like a sex metaphor and some do not, right? Not everyone has to view it through the same lens, but because they're writing Stardew Valley romances, basically every character is in the framework of you are going to get to level 5 and then be able to kiss the character, right? Which is just like, that's a in-demand function of these style of games. I'm not here to criticize that, even if I'm not always in a necessarily interested in that. I used the console to see everyone's companion quests because I was like, Merida's the one, but then I was like, I should see these other ones. Yes, and so I did see everything.
I did that because I was mostly with Meredith because Meredith started was the most useful. This is not a thing that like is actually true. You can put any guy on anything, on any like person. But initially I thought that you're like every one of your party members had like a, you had to use their beast, you know, in your lineup.
Oh yeah.
And that was not true at all.
No.
But I kind of stuck to it. Like when I use, it just kind of like felt more personable. Meredith was the way, like always brought the electric
cat. Cat 5 is one of my, like I said, it was Cat 5 and my big ghost sheep and they just kicked ass. Like I didn't need anybody else.
But like when I used, when I went to Felix, I used his, like he had the one that could change it. The one that could change everyone's form, right? Like that was the one he was using.
Yes. Which I found very unuseful.
There were times where that was very useful.
So, like, the time I was doing Felix quest, I was like, I can't wait to get rid of you because I don't like your guy. Your guy sucks to me.
They give you enough freedom to basically not, like, to customize everyone when you put them in enough that that wouldn't, like, affect your, like, play experience.
No. Yeah.
But I just kept it that way. I was like, I feel like it is of the style of this game where I should be using the partner's main beast in my, like, team building at that moment whenever I'm, like, doing their quest.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because, like, the dog I was, like, the last one I found also, and the dog has the ice version of the dog, but I'd already used the fire version of the dog, for the early part of the game was, like, my MVP. That thing kicked ass. And so when I got another I was like, oh, and this is true of, like, multiple people's, their, like, beast or whatever. But, like, I was like, it's just not very special to me that you just have the normal guy, but he's ice this time. That's not, like, cool. It's not enough.
Yeah, I thought the dog was fine. I didn't really use the ice.
The dog is cute, and it uses a balloon instead of the wings that everyone else uses, which I love. But I was like, I already left Pom Bomb out in the, you know, Spitfire can get out of here. I don't need him anymore. He was a good boy in hour 5, but we're in hour 15. I need more than this.
I'm not going to be using fucking Pidgeotto.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get some real killers here, please.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Cat 5 was holding it down the entire fucking game.
That's so true. I do think it's interesting that due to the like mechanics of how copying works, as like using recording monsters onto tapes, and also you're like transforming. Like the metaphor is mostly about transforming and fusing.
Yeah.
Which means that you don't have little guys. The beasts are not little guys. They're not little guys. They're not your friends. They're not representations of friendship or anything. You have no feelings towards your guys.
Yeah.
They're just forms you take on. The feelings are towards, like, party members, right? To doing RPG party member stuff when it does the ending of the game, it is everyone fusing together into a big monster to take out the bad guy.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to me that in a, like, a collection-style game, you're like, they're not your little guys. It's just a weird consequence of how they structured this game. It means that I'm not really invested in any of them personally.
Yeah.
Like, which is fine. I'm invested in the party members, right? But it is just a different framework for a like monster collecting game because usually collecting your friends is like the whole angle.
Yes. Yeah. Instead, it's way more about your relationship with your companions and their storylines because like Meredith is cool because Meredith, she's looking for a record, right? And you go to the mall, you go to this rundown mall, and she finds the record, but it's like she finds the album, but it's like, this is not the same record. This is like this is from a different universe. And brings that stuff. Cause she's like born in the 60s. So they like, she comes in and like, it's like 1989. So she does not know shit about some of the technology that everyone's talking about. Like she knows what a tape is, but everything else, she's like, what?
Yes.
Weirdly, she's like the most at sea, like the lady from fucking Shakespeare's Twelfth Night in the 16th century is less at sea than the character from the late 80s, which I think is good and funny.
Yes, I mean, because she's just like, you know, down for anything, right? Just like,
Viola's like a heroic character. She's here to find her brother. She talks like Frog. It's great. Love it.
Yes.
Whereas Eugene's from the future, and that's why he sucks.
Oh, he sucks so much. This fucking loser.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm going to protect the city, and he's got a fucking drive jacket.
And he's also like, I'm not going to join the Rangers because I must go my own way. And I'm like,
yeah. guys that fucking suck.
Guys that suck. You gotta have a guy that sucks in an RPG. It was like, it's the lore. You have to have one Yosuke on your team, and everyone goes, fuck that guy.
Yeah. Whereas Felix is super chill. He's like, I showed up with my entire apartment. Everyone else just shows up on their own. For some reason, his entire apartment gets sucked in, and he's just like, you find him on a hillside, and like half his bedroom is there.
Yes.
Which I love that. I think he's very cool. And he's the one who drew the angel cat girl who becomes alive. And it's like, why is she alive? Why is she a person now?
It's just weird. The honest
I love it because all of her like abilities fucking suck until she evolves too. It's like nothing. She has nothing.
Yeah, she's useless.
She's like a Magikarp, and then she ascends and is a badass.
Did not give her the Gilmon 300 strength.
No.
And just like design the coolest guy ever for some reason.
Yeah. She literally has a move that's like bad joke. It doesn't do anything. Just tells a random joke, has no effect. And it's like a joke about the character she's fighting. So it's like all like writing for whatever the monster is, which is a lot of jokes.
There's just a lot of bespoke little bits like that. Just a shockingly fully featured game.
Yeah.
Well-rounded, well-polished, just good. I'm just like, man, good-ass video game.
Yeah, no, that part's... this game has a metronome that's really useful. A metronome is the Pokemon move that just does a random move, if you don't know. And in this, it's called Be Random, but the Be Random is intercapped, like an obnoxious internet from the mid-aughts. And it just does any move that you have. It costs whatever AP you've got. Like, it does a move that up to that AP and then just takes that AP out. And it's sick. And it just anything that you could theoretically afford to spend. And because the game is the way it is, often that's like really sick, weird stuff you don't have.
Well, yeah, like I was using Trick and Treat a lot, which are the random buff and random debuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Options. And they were really good. They're really good moves. And they're really useful, too. Because, like, most of the time, one of those status effects will do something useful. Sometimes it'll give you, like, oh, reduced ranged damage from a melee attacker, right? Like, sometimes it'll be annoying like that. But generally speaking, it'll give you something. And I was always using that. I was one of as many status effects possible. And the way they balance those status effects, by the way, is that they all... Every single hit knocks three turns, right? That's three turns. And that's not very many turns. Three turns is not very many turns. So even though you get like a million status effects on you, you're always going through more different status effects. The battle is constantly shifting around you and you're planning for like, okay, in two turns I'll have this many points, but like this timer will be ticked off. I have to use this right now, otherwise I will have like lost this advantage. All that stuff's being pushed really interestingly in ways that were just never... Like, there is a multiplayer update that they've put out, and I'm sure it's good fun. I haven't, like, tried it, but I bet it works. But I don't think this game's ever going to have the, like, competitive, hunger that Pokemon gets. Not just because it's a million times more popular just as a brand, but, like, there are too many mechanics that are just built knowing the... Accepting the randomness of a single-player RPG, they just account for more variance. I'm doing too many strategies that just would... are dice rolls, which is fine in a single player RPG. That's the game they made. I think it's really good. But I'm curious how that, like, how does the, are people going to get annoyed at the multiplayer mode if everyone's just like casting random abilities constantly? Because that's a good strategy if it works.
Yeah.
And know. So that, I'm happy about that. Like, that's not a criticism. That's because I am a single player gamer and I am constantly annoyed at whenever a video game.
Here we go. Ruins the balance of my single player game. I'm looking at the Reddit from a month ago and someone's complaining about it because it was like, I hope this would be co-op, but there's not much you can do together. So it's up to 8 players in the same world. Battles happen separately. You can't do the story together. It's more adjacent single player, though you can team up to fight the raid beasts, right? The dark guys who are just on. Like in the world, right?
Oh, those guys.
Yeah. So here we go. As the developer responds, we had a few comments asking about full online party co-op. From release, we had quests for PvP and tape trading, like other monster taming RPGs. Weren't sure if we'd even have the scope to implement multiplayer. And they're like, we were able to do it across all our platforms, which we were really surprised by. But we couldn't do like two entirely different approaches to multiplayer. We built it to be a single player game alongside an NPC companion. And so stories require all characters to be on screen, but only we couldn't shove a third character in, and we couldn't take out your party member because your party member is tied to story progression and stuff. And so they're like, yeah, we would love to make Baldur's Gate 3, but that's 500 people and we're three people.
Yes. And yeah. I am so happy that it's bounced around the single player campaign. You know, as someone who's complaints about Pokemon games, so they've got so many mechanics, they never use them in the single player campaign.
Yeah.
And I just had a great time. Yeah, the I found the story stuff like toward the end kind of funny. How like, yep, we're doing this again. I love that. Like the indie RPGs are also just like, have you heard? This power of friendship can defeat the nihilism of the universe. That's so true.
Well, yeah, the guy with the prism for a face wants to like tear down the walls between multiverses or whatever, create a null state. You're like, no, friendship, and then you blow him up.
I would rate this as a positive 7 out of 10 on the doing this exact plot scale. I didn't think it was like Live Alive levels of good of doing this exact plot.
Yeah.
But then again, nothing is. I didn't think it was like Final Fantasy 12 levels of fucking annoying about it.
No. It was like, totally fine.
I thought
perfunctory. Weirdly, I wish there was like an option to just be like, what if we just stay here and build the city? We don't need to go back. Like,
the part where everyone just
goes
end.
Back is really weird. Yeah. Because, like, your character's very clearly, like, your motivation, as stated, is always, I want to get back. Like, it's the one thing your character is given, no matter what, like, you want to do. Their character's always like, I want to leave the island. And everyone else wants to go back. But, like, the whole, it's not like the windfish wakes up and the island disappears, right? Like, the island's still there, seemingly. You just go back and your companions go back.
Yeah. You just can't, like, it's so unlike you. It's not a permanent connection, right?
Yeah. The implication is, like, if people want to leave, they could, but some people will probably just stay there, right? Because they've lived there their whole lives.
I assumed, because I knew there was a post-game the whole time, I was like, well, I'm not leaving the island, obviously. But yeah. You do. It's just like...
It just ignores that happens. Like, the post-game takes place right before you did all that. Don't worry about it.
It's just a different situation.
Very video games answer, which is fine. Like, I'm not complaining about that at all, obviously. But, like, the part where, like, you become a gym leader if you beat all the gym leaders, and then you start to have to, like, deal with the, like, what your responsibilities as a gym leader is, like, interesting. I'm like, why not spend more time with, like, there's a part in this game where you're, like, given materials to, like, decorate your little town. And I was like, oh, this is going to unlock the fucking, like, construction board where I can use all these materials that let me build things. Like, I'm going to be able to decorate my house. And it's fine. Like I said, made by three people, three full-time devs at the company that made this.
And
I'm not
critiquing
them. To
be clear, the scope it has for the team size is crazy.
But it gestures towards games where that is the main mechanic. And like, you do get it. You did get a room. There's nothing ever to do in there. I don't know why it exists, really, but you do get a room. And I was like, oh, I'm going to decorate this at some point. No, not really. It's fine.
Yeah, and I was surprised by how little the plot revolved around Harbor Town.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be, like, discussions of what to do, right? Like, do we
build
this?
Well, there's a little bit where you go to an earlier town that's been, like, ruined. Like, it's just the ruins of this town where everyone used to live. And then there's, like, a splinter town that's all, like, these weird cultists living up in the mountains. And I thought there'd be more RPG around that stuff. And it's, like, tied into Kaylee's story, but, like, not really.
Yeah, they kind of just, like, layers on a few ideas, but not doesn't go too hard on any of them.
Yeah.
It's a pretty light touch to its story, which is fine. It means that, like, it didn't hit that hard for me.
No.
Bit at the end of the game where everyone comes up and goes, goodbye, I love you. It's like funny because...
And then the dog's like, I'm going to stay with you. It's like, okay, you don't have a personality, so that works out.
You are a dog, after all. Yeah. Come on.
Can I, instead of going back to 2024, can I go back to the 80s with my music head girlfriend?
Yeah, I would rather that. It'd be like, hey, by the way, it gets so much worse for Britain. You don't understand.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe I don't want to live through the 90s in Britain. Then I will be killed in the Wizard War or whatever.
That's true. Just having to explain to Meredith, like, but I don't know how your universe is, but you're like about 6 years away from Tony Blair. So,
yeah,
look forward to that.
Though I will know all of the cool aesthetic music formats to get into before they blow up and become really expensive. So me and Meredith will have the coolest mini disc collection ever.
If you could go back to like 89 right now and align your life alongside like the acquiring certain stupid things. You wouldn't even, I guess you'd probably just, you know, do that with stock and get loads of money that it wouldn't matter. But for some reason, yeah. I'm like thinking you'd have to be.
No, but I do it entirely through collecting nerd shit that you can then yeah. resell. Yes, absolutely.
You're not doing the easy way of just, oh, I'm going to buy Apple stock in 1996.
No, I have 15 wrapped copies of Earthbound that I bought when it was at its lowest price.
I bought so many cases of Pokemon cards, and in 2021, holy shit, gonna go.
You just revealed the Time Traveler treasure trove of sealed Gen 1 boxes of Pokemon cards. People would flip the fuck out.
Oh, that'd be so good. Oh, that'd be so fucking funny.
If you had sealed boxes of Pokemon, that might be worth more than a lot of stocks that you could invest in. It's a fucked up thing.
Of like original Gen 1 stuff? Yeah, that's like yeah. stock level of, yeah. man. That would be crazy. You just had sealed 1998 Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
Just cases of that shit.
Yeah. You're going to ruin the economy for everyone.
Imagine if like someone had revealed they've been doing that and they just like dump a whole wardrobe of that shit into circulation overnight.
Oh my everyone. God. Yes, absolutely.
Because you don't just make a bunch of money. You ruin everyone else's speculation. And that's yes. where the true joy comes in.
Yes, absolutely. I don't need to be rich. I also invest in Apple stock, but I am going to ruin your lives.
So I'm like, not only am I investing in stock to get myself some points back.
I will like, dump 8,000 shiny Charizards into the market. Yes, absolutely.
Just to like fuck over some collectors on a specific day.
Yeah. Anytime amazing. One particular thing gets too popular in the speculation market, I will have 50 of them ready to dump and ruin it for everybody.
That's so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised that the lack of like just an ongoing plot about the Rangers and what we're going to do with Harbour Town and like, are we going to like build in this direction? I just expect that to be some kind of community conflict of some kind that everything would revolve around.
It's just like a smaller game than that, right? Like it because of all of the beasts and all the fusing and all the mechanics, I feel like it's really good at selling itself as way bigger than it clearly is, right? It's a small game.
But also it's the dialogue that is there is all about the like romance. Like everyone just is hot and they hang out with you and you kiss them. And that's the only story that you ever get. And I was just so tired by it, which is less a thought of the game and more just like, I just don't like that kind of like, I want a meaty story in my video game. Not meaty is the wrong word, but I want something different than that. Than just five romance stories back to back to back.
The actual answer is you're only supposed to really see one of them, but we just felt obligated to see all of them.
But even if you don't get like a personal, you just hang out with your hot crew of obvious romance options and your all friends. I wanted some conflict. I wanted some meat to the relationships. And it was just not doing that. It was just kind of their fluff, which I think is like mostly fine. Like I say, any narrative criticisms I have are much more just like, I'm not a person you should listen to. The game sold better. I assume the audience who wants like nice romance games is very happy with this, right? Like it's not like a number one feature, but it's there and it's pleasant enough. And the absence of like these two characters are in conflict is not like that big of a problem.
No. But also like if this game ever did good enough for like, we're going to return to New World, I'd be like, yeah, please put more story in it next time. That'd be like my main suggestion.
Yeah, and I would love for like just something with a little more to chew on, right? Something, some ideas there. I think the ideas here are, you know, mostly fine. I do generally agree with them. Like, I also think landlords are bad, but I'm, would just like to see it presented in a little less of a like, yep, I agree with you type way. But that's my only complaints, really. Like, you know, annoying. Nitpicky stuff about the like narrative, which is like third on the like stuff that is important in this game.
Yeah.
Like pretty fucking happy. I was so happy. It went better than I could expect. This game's fucking great.
Yeah, not a great time playing it. Because I was like, I don't know. I mean, I don't like the mechanics of Pokemon as much as you, but I had a really good time with it.
Yeah, it's kind of just not, like, we compare it because it's the obvious comparison point, but it's much less of a Pokemon than I expected. It's just an RPG.
Yeah.
But yeah, good gaming.
Yeah. All right, we'll hit some music and we'll come back for our questions. All right. If you would like to send in questions, you can send them to abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. They can be about anything, not just the game we're covering. Our first one is from Emrys, who writes in before, like literally an hour after we recorded last episode, because Emrys is great with time. What's your favorite FMV in a non-FMV game?
Can I say it's the Battle of the Gardens?
I mean, I don't know if that counts. I mean, it is FMV. I feel like... I guess you're technically correct, right? It is a full motion video playing over the
You want
video
live
game.
Action. You want actors. You want actors.
My answer is Mr. Scratch, because of course it's Mr.
I mean,
Scratch.
That's the actual answer. It's Mr. Scratch. I love Mr. Scratch. Everyone says Alan Wake 2 is really good. I don't know. I haven't played it. I would like to one day.
Yes, but even my friends who love Alan Wake 2 are like, man, Mr. Scratch is not as good as he was in Alan Wake 1. So
he wasn't in Alan Wake 1. He was in Alan Wake American.
Well, yes.
Nightmare.
I always forget that's not actually the DLC to Alan Wake.
Oh, you mean you forgot about The Journey or whatever it's
yes,
called?
Yes, yes.
I think it's not called The Journey. It's something like that.
Yeah. Ben writes in, I'm a huge Metroidvania fan, but I never really actually played a Castlevania until the other day when I lit up Aria of Sorrow. Is there a franchise or game you never touched despite being extremely obviously something you'd enjoy?
Tons. That's like half the video games.
For a long time, it was like My Summer Vacation because it wasn't available in English, but I'm fixing that one, so...
This is less for you, but I feel like...
Yeah, there's less of these. There's less for these. I feel like if I got over the initial hump, I would be a Dwarf Fortress person, but I can't bring myself to get over the initial hump.
You would have been a Dwarf Fortress person a decade ago, but I think...
Yeah, it's hard now because I'm just so busy, yes. Yeah.
Too many disparate things. You don't have the, like... Even if you became unemployed again, you would use it for a Miami summer. You wouldn't be like, by which I mean doing a bunch of different things.
Yes.
And you wouldn't sink into the like, I'm going Dwarf Fortress mode for 2 months, which is kind of what that game needs.
Yeah. But yeah, I mostly just kind of follow my interests anyway. So I feel like I'm doing all right, mostly.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like literally every RPG that I haven't played is kind of, you know, it's crazy that I haven't played Etrian Odyssey yet, right? Like stuff like this.
Yeah. Bonus question. Who's your favorite Castlevania enemy? Mine's the Persephones, as they're just human maids who are also martial arts masters. I bet they're vampiric maids. I don't think the Persephones are actually human, but I understand that they still are martial arts masters. That is true.
That's true.
Mine is Legion. Any Castlevania where a big ball made of people shows up, I'm having a good time. Legion's just fucking cool. I've always thought Legion was cool. Love it.
Mine is just the simple, the humble, the red skeleton. It comes back.
Oh, the one, the blood skeleton that won't die? Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
When I think of iconic Castlevania enemies, like what's the fucking Goomba of Castlevania? And I guess it's the normal skeleton. But
it's a normal skeleton that you can kill, yes.
But
or a bat.
Or a bat. But like specifically, it's the blood skeleton, you kill it, and then about 3 seconds later, it's back again. Like, oh,
in fact, there's a Mario analog for this. It's a fucking dry bones.
Oh, right. That's already in Mario. Well, look, Mario doesn't come to my brain as well. Look, shut up. I'm going to be roasted even though I had a good answer.
I do have a good answer. That's true. Kel writes in, I have good news and bad news for you about Uru. The bad news, it's not very good.
Oh, damn. Who could have seen this coming?
The good news is it is extremely what it is. You get to create your own dadsona. You get to solve puzzles in order to access multiplayer aspects of a multiplayer game. Every person has their own little world they can customize by solving puzzles to add things like grass and rocks. There's also a small but extremely dedicated fan base that's still creating content for this thing. They just released a new world a few years ago and had a little ceremony for it, after which everyone put their characters in a single file to take turns accessing the new book. That's sick.
Wait, does the current... I thought Uru was offline. I like the version on Steam now, but you say you
know.
Can still go online on it?
I don't know. I don't know. Don't ask me.
I assume it's all peer-to-peer if that's the case, but like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
That's cool. Thank you for the email.
Luke writes in, what's your favorite and least favorite instances of games using music with lyrics, excluding rhythm games?
Least favorite, the hardest one, because like... I mean, I guess favorite's hard as well. Like, I always like it. I always pop.
Yeah, I always like it. I can't think of a single... I genuinely can't think of a single one that I'm, like, down on. Even when I think it, like, it's cultural... Like, I think the Rules of Nature drop in Revengeance is... People talk it up way too much. It's not that good. But it's not like it's bad. I'm not here to say it's bad. I'm not get it twisted, right?
I'm not... get it twisted. I'm not, like, as high on Revengeance as, like, the culture widely. However... It's cool when Rules of Nature plays.
It's all right. Yeah, it's all right.
It's fucking cool. He rolls an edge of plays. You block the fucking raise attack. And it's like, rolls an edge. It's fucking sick. That's gaming. That's the heart of gaming.
It's all right. It's pretty good.
The one that's hard for me.
I was just going to say, Cat singing the song in Gravity Rush 2. That's a great one. Love that. The musical performance in Mario Odyssey, highlight of Mario Odyssey, a game I mostly don't like, so...
The Toku theme in Live Alive.
Oh, fuck yes! That one's so good! Can't think of a single one of these I don't like.
I'm trying to think of one where I'm like, oh, that was a bad time to put a vocal song in. Like, I guess I'm like, maybe they took it a little too far in Saints Row 4, right? Like, is the closest they can get? But even then...
In Saints Row 3, where you're riding around singing the song with your homies, that part's the best part of the game.
That part's the best part of the game. I'm specifically, like, the opening bit where, like,
yes.
You don't want to miss a thing is playing or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe that was a little, like, it was better in Saints Row 3, but it's not like I'm against it.
When power plays, you dive down onto your fucking face? That part's pretty sick.
Yeah, when I Need a Hero plays at the end of the game, and you're like, man, I love video games. Those songs are so good in Saints Row 3, they trick you into thinking Saints Row 3 is a good game. It's not. It's bad.
It's not.
But the song's good, and so we had a great time. Even though the part where it's the shooter is fucking terrible.
Yeah. Ancient writes in with basically the same question, what's your favorite lyrics kick in? We just named a couple. Predict Jackson will say some Sonic game. I don't know what M might pick. The first fist bump in Sonic Forces is fucking great. I love it.
That's true. I think if I had to pick my favorite one in a Sonic game, it's not my favorite Sonic like vocal song. Like Live and Learn's a better song, but I think in terms of like vocals coming in, it's the end of Adventure 1 when the final boss against the Final Chaos, whatever.
Yeah.
I forget what the name's called, but you know, when you're Super Sonic at the end of Adventure 1.
Yeah.
And Open Your Heart's playing.
Okay. I think I would say the same thing, but for Sonic Adventure 2.
that's not really as much of a kick in. That just kind of starts playing Live and Learn.
You go Super Sonic and you and Shadow are Super Sonic.
Yeah, it's
Sonic
one of the greatest things that ever happened in video games. I'm just saying that, whatever. I do really like how cool, like, the reveal in this game specifically, the like, main battle song has had lyrics the whole time. They wait so long on revealing that to you.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. More lyrics in games, generally, I think is a good idea, personally.
I would say the music in this game has a Ruby energy.
It absolutely has a Ruby energy. 100%. I was thinking that the entire time we were playing it.
But I was like, I bet this is hitting for him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Ancient writes in with a second question. Someone just said to me, I'm weak to little guys and orb types. So please stop if you've already done this during the Pokemon discussion, but what types are you personally weak to?
Little guy and orb types are not real Pokemon types.
You know what I mean? What is your weakness as like a thing?
Like, what are my favorite ones? Or what am I
just like?
Just
like your weaknesses, like aesthetically, whatever, as like a trope, whatever. What are you weak to? I'm weak to student council, class presidents and office ladies.
That's true. I'm weak to like sad robots that are basically pets.
Data? You mean Data?
I meant the like little droid in Andor.
Oh, okay. Data counts though, doesn't he?
Data counts. Data's not really a pet. I mean, whenever you're like, it's like a robot, but we're treating it like a dog narratively.
Okay. Fair enough. Sometimes they treat Data like a dog narratively.
That's true. Submitting complaint to 1993 Paramount.
Yeah. Jess writes in, there's millions of line reads of games you might hear a lot and get stuck in your head, but is there any line or line read you probably heard only once, but it'll not leave your brain no matter what? I've not been able to stop thinking about Keiji Fujiwara's Arden greeting the party the perfect English good morning before driving the Titan. That's a good one.
That's pretty funny. Hearing only once, I'm too much of the, you know, I think that enemy got the point. All my lines in my head are like 7,000 lines.
Mine too. I can't think of ones that just stuck in my head only like once.
Maybe when in Metal Gear Solid 2 when he's like, not nerd, no. No, stick God. Down. Me to forget.
But yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I have an exact answer for this, but many video game lines live rent-free in my brain, unfortunately.
Oh, wait, sorry, of course, there's obviously one, and that is the number one classic. I should have been the one to fill her dark soul with light.
Oh, that one is really good.
So that one's stupid. Delightful. What a stupid series!
God. You've been tasked with designing a new collectible monster for an existing from an existing video game franchise or property of your choice. What's your high-level pitch or description of this monster?
Does it have to be a franchise that's already?
That's the idea. Monsters? Yes. No. It can be just you have to create. What are you collecting from a thing that already exists?
What do I collect?
I'm pitching slime collecting, right? Or I'm pitching, we're going to get every Jack Frost variant in the world in my video game. Like, you pitch a monster from a franchise.
I thought this was, design a new Digimon or something.
I think that's what I'm saying, though, is it right? Because if it's from what's pre-existing, you have to already have designed the thing. Like, the thing already exists, right? I was reading the question.
I'm just so confused by the specifics of the question. I would like to turn all of the fucking Dynasty Warrior Three Kingdoms guys into little slime monsters. Little goofy RPG guys.
Oh, what is, if I get a Guan Yu slime, that would be pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know exactly which of them match up to which kind of design, but some kind of monster-based Three Kingdoms system.
Yeah. That's a pretty good one. I like that. Adrian writes in, favorite cassette beast design? Probably the fish tank.
The fish tank's really good.
Yeah. Are there any non-Pokemon iconic monsters like Final Fantasy Tonberries or Dragon Quest Slime? Are there plenty of non-Pokemon iconic monsters? What's a monster design from games that stand out to you? Adrian has the monsters from Legend of Mana, specifically a Cockatrice design that was sent in, which is a pretty good guy.
That's a pretty classic guy.
I mean, my gut answer is it's fucking Mario Brothers. Everyone knows the Mario enemies.
That is true. Do you remember the multiple years where I was playing old Zelda games, but because I was playing old Zelda games and not ones where the names came up on screen, I didn't know what any enemies. I was all the skeleton guys, and you were just going crazy.
I was going crazy.
Making
you
actually lose your mind when I wouldn't say Stalfos because they're just the skeleton guys. It's whatever. It's just Zelda guys.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to send a message. I lost my questions tab. How did I do this? Do you have a favorite monster design from media generally that isn't, I guess, not from a video game? I don't know. What's the difference here?
I guess you can just put cartoons in this one. Agumon.
Agumon is pretty good. No, Gilmon.
Gilmon's like a funner character, but he's not as perfect a little guy as Agumon, who's just like a weird dinosaur blob.
That's fair. Weirdly, I don't think this thing about Sonic, because we were asked about Sonic earlier. I don't think Sonic has good iconic character designs other than the Chaos, which are good. They're not monsters though. I don't think Sonic monsters really do much for me.
They're all kind of weird little
robots,
mechs,
basically.
Eggman robots. They're not that iconic.
Yeah.
Maybe someone would disagree.
Yeah.
The fucking Mega Man robot masters.
Oh yeah. I mean, Mega Man's got some iconic monsters. It's not on the level of Mario Brothers. Like Goombas, Koopa Troopas.
Well, yeah. No. That is Mario is clearly the winner here. Everyone knows what a Goomba is.
Yeah. What would you name your legally distinct monster battling game using the format of a form of storage and synonym for creature?
Okay, so it's this isn't their form of storage, but like, yeah, I assume I would just go super literal and they would just be battle guys. They're the guys you battle with. This is kind of how I talk.
That's really funny.
Have you guys played battle guys lately? It's definitely guys. The creature is guys. That's just what I go to. It's something guys.
I'm going to do a Star Wars theme one called Holocron Horrors.
You said the other day that about 80% of Star Wars media
way too much Star Wars media by volume is about holocrons, because specifically I was listening to the AMC about the end of season 2 of Rebels, which is about fucking finding a fucking holocron that is load bearing to the plot and then it's going to be important in season 3. And I was like, I just don't think holocrons are interesting. Just someone's got a fucking data tape with a message on it. Who gives a shit? But it's like literally 80% of Star Wars media is about finding a fucking data tape with some information on it.
Usually from a lost Jedi of some kind that has some kind of information. I understand why this is the thing that they go to so often, but there are so many ones of these that's like, well, we've got to find the holocron that reveals the truth.
Yeah. And every time I'm like, oh, if 80% of Earth fiction revolved around finding a burned CD that had someone's fucking blog on it, you would walk away from fiction.
It's true. That is kind of where Star Wars is at. Oh, that's funny.
Steve writes in about asking us our thoughts on the Seiken Densetsu /Mana series. About the same age as them, had some similar formative RPG experiences, so maybe you fell in love with Secret of Mana as a youth. You're about to be disappointed. I'm sorry. Seiken Densetsu 3 fan translation, Legend of Mana. So I played the first Mana game. What's it called?
Adventure of Mana.
They don't
Final Fantasy Adventure.
Final Fantasy Adventure, thank you. On the Game Boy, like just literally like 2 years through, 2-3 years ago, thought it was fucking incredible. I loved it. Then I went to play Secret of Mana, which is a game that I just missed as a youth. Did not like it very much at all. And then I went to look at Seiken Densetsu 3, and it didn't look that different than Secret of Mana, so I just didn't play it. Mana just doesn't seem like it's a thing that I would care about, I'll be honest with you. I think if I was going to dig into one of these style of, I mean, they're not the same at all, but like I'm more interested in what Saga's doing than what Mana's doing overall. But even then, I'm not like digging into it that much, but I do want to play the more story based Saga games before I would go back to Mana, I think. Mana just seems like it's for people who really like Hya-Hya-Hya, and I don't. That's not me.
You're just not a Hya-Hya-Hya person.
Yeah.
Though that new Mana game looks cool, I'm probably not going to play it.
Yeah,
it looks,
like, you know, I hope it's good. I always hope they're good. There's plenty of space for good RPGs in the world. The game should be good.
Bold stance.
Yeah. Secret of Mana did nothing for me. I was really bummed out about it because I was expecting it to be a big hit and thought it was really bad. So, just everything took forever. It's not my thing. I understand, because everyone I talked to about it, because I knew people who liked it, is like, yeah, I played it with like my sibling or my best friend when I was a kid. We played multiplayer and we'd never played a game like that before, especially one that was multiplayer. And yeah, I get it, but I wasn't. I'm in my late 30s playing this game by myself. I've seen it all before.
That's true.
Adam writes in, if you could have a Myst-style puzzle adventure game set in a location from another video game, what game would you set it in?
Any other video game.
Any other video game, yeah.
I want one where you're like Cortana in Halo.
Oh.
You're on a weird Halo installation that's like a Myst play. That kind of works surprisingly well.
Honestly. Yeah, like oh, she gets uploaded to the fucking Covenant base and has to figure out how to unlock it, right?
I was specifically thinking like a Halo, like you could do like a weird otherworldly Halo installation.
Yeah, like exactly. A weird place. Yeah. But like literally her job is to do this thing, right? Yes. That you would be doing. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I like that a lot. I mean, my immediate gut is like, oh, well, like a sci-fi, like a Star Trek or a Mass Effect or whatever. But then I'm like, the problem with that is that, the things you're interacting with become so abstractified by being like space consoles that like the tactileness of Myst puzzles, which is like really key to me, is like why I like it, is that it's levers and, you know, pianos and like it's objects in the world.
I mean, that's why, like when someone did a modern one, it was the room, right? It was like,
So my answer has to be like Resident Evil. Only Spencer Manson mansion, no zombies.
Oh shit, just like what if you made a Resident Evil adventure game?
Yeah,
you took out the action from action adventure.
Yeah. That'd be pretty sick.
That would be pretty sick.
Second, our related question about Yuji Horii's recent suggestion that Dragon Quest 1 through 3 be played chronologically instead of release order. Is there any game series with a contiguous storyline where the story be better served by being played out of its original release order? No. Also, Yuji Horii's just saying that because the games are coming out that way. He doesn't actually believe that. I don't believe him.
Yuji Horii is lying. He is lying the same way that every single producer is lying when they say this Final Fantasy is a great starting point. Oh, Rebirth, we've designed Rebirth to be approachable to newcomers and experts. No, it's not. It's just not. They just want you to buy the video game. They're lying.
Yeah. It's fine. I'm not even mad about it, but it is just saying the thing to sell the video game. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I truly believe if you have an option of not playing Dragon Quest or playing Dragon Quest out of order, play it out of order. Who gives a shit?
The thing with the Dragon Quest is like, you should play it in order if you want to play all the Dragon Quests. If that's your goal, is to play the Dragon Quests, there is an order to do that in. If you're not doing a project and you just want to play a video game, you can play any Dragon Quest at any time. They're fucking Dragon Quests. No, it doesn't matter. Right? Like, it's not like a big deal. They're Dragon Quests. They're very approachable games.
My one wrinkle to this, as someone who's primarily interfaced with the mid-period Dragon Quest through their DS and 3DS ports, is much like those, I suspect. If you want to play Dragon Quest 1 through 3, you should also look at the other versions of Dragon Quest 1 through 3 and not only play those through their 2D HD versions, because they will end up being very similar to each other. And while they're all Famicom games and they are originally very similar to each other, I think it's worth at least having a familiarity with what those were and are. Like, play a couple hours of them while you play the new versions just to see. I think that's totally worthwhile and worth doing. You don't have to obviously do that the entire time. You don't have to play the Famicom versions, but I do think it's worth, just for historical context, seeing what the originals actually are.
The thing is, the Famicom version of Dragon Quest 1 is super approachable. Like, the only problem in the West is the translation's not great.
Well, it's fine. The other thing is, like, the really annoying things about, like, you have to select the fucking menu to go up and down stairs and shit like that.
Even that, it's not that big a deal. This was a game really for, like, annoying. Anyone.
I think it really, yes, it is. Yes, it is. I think it's, like, there are things in the form of an RPG that just got ironed out. Like, no one makes you do that. You don't have to hit check every time you want to fucking talk to someone. There's a dedicated button for that shit now. And that's how it should be. But the game is fine. It's totally fun. When I played through Dragon Quest 1 and 2, I played the Game Boy Color versions, the ones I completed. I did look at it, like, messed with the Famicom versions. But, part of the reason I waited, because I was like, I don't really want to play another Game Boy Color version, and I could go back to the Famicom, and that was what I was probably going to do, because the SNES version, the fan translation, is not very good. And then I don't have to. I'm going to play that one 2D HD, but I probably won't buy 1 and 2 that way. I'll probably just play 3 that way.
Yeah, I would like, after they do these HD 2D versions, to just port the mobile versions of the DS trilogy to modern, like, platforms.
Yeah. Yeah.
The DS and 3DS games are fine as they are. You don't need to do any more work to them. Just port those. And then that's basically everything except 9 at that point.
Yeah. Desneo writes in, really cozy time playing Cassette Beasts last Christmas. Excited to hear what you think. My question is, for the Cassette Beasts and Monster Sanctuaries of the world, what do they need to do to catch the attention of the larger mainstream audiences and outlets they deserve? For all the criticisms Pokemon games seem to get, the indie monster taming scene seems to get too little coverage for how it's pushing the genre lately. You just can't compete with that, is the actual answer.
This is true of everything. It's not just the monster taming. Like, you know, we did Spark 3.
Spark 3 immediately, comes to mind.
And those are just the genres we're paying attention to. Theoretically, all the genres I'm half paying attention to probably have a game like this that I'm not aware of outside my, like, view.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't know. And that's just the reality of how marketing and everything works. I think it's a real shame.
But also, you don't want the Pokemon fandom at large to get a hold of these games.
Yeah, in specifics, yes. Like, you don't actually want the Pokemon fandom to do that. But I do think, like, these games getting more awareness is good. This game has been pretty successful, like, by standard.
I just mean if the mass audience, like, the thing that Pokemon Random is, got a hold of these developers, these games, they would implode. That no one can withstand that. The only reason Nintendo gets away with it is because it's a giant faceless corporation. And I'm sure working on Pokemon still takes its toll, because people fucking hate you for everything you do.
Yeah. And you get, like, ridiculous deadlines, and it sucks, and you're like, this is a nightmare. And everyone's mad at you constantly for things that you have no control over.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the answer is that the size of what Pokemon is can not be withstood by any object of this small size, nor should it be, really, you know? you look at like Stardew as like kind of an upper limit, right? Like Stardew's still Stardew, the main guy's still making it. You get bigger than that and you become like Mojang, and then you get bought by Microsoft, right? Like there's a hard like cap where you get to be like Undertale or Stardew, and above that you grow too big and you get bought by someone.
Yeah, but this also, the other element of this is just like there are absolutely like areas of like audiences that form around brands, right?
Yes. Rather
than games.
Yes.
Like I constantly get like the Fire Emblem people in my YouTube who for some reason are not SRPG people. They play Fire Emblem mods, they replay Fire Emblem stuff. They're just talking about Fire Emblem 24/7. I'm like, do you got any other
games? There's a whole genre here. You could play any of the other games.
And obviously, that's not everyone. I'm not like saying that's how people are on the internet. But I do think that this is a specifically outcome of the way that like YouTube picks topics, right? And that topic yes. you are marked in. And so
I also think Nintendo as a like company has a lot of these type of things in its portfolio.
Yes.
And they've engendered this kind of fan base.
And it just is a disappointing like lack of curiosity. But it's not just Nintendo. And I think it's just how online like content is served. You make the content for the topic that you've been assigned, otherwise you don't get any fucking views. Everyone is pushed this way, and it just sucks. There's a lot of overlapping factors, some of which are definitely people not being as curious as I would like them to be. Even myself, you know, I'll probably go and play more Final Fantasy games when I could be playing good RPGs I would like more, right? Like I'm not free of sin in this area, nor do I want to put myself above it. But in addition, there's just lots of like systemic factors, obviously, that just make it hard. Though I'm glad that Cassette Beast has been as successful as it has. It hasn't had like the Balatro level of like huge breakout, right? But I don't think it could even sustain that. It's too much of a normal video game.
I don't know what Monster Sanctuary is. So this is like a 2D game.
What's Monster Sanctuary?
It's like 2D. It looks like way more like kind of like RTS-y in its battle system. I just see the health bars and I go, that's an RTS.
Monster Taming meets Metroidvania.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Collect, train, and battle monsters in this side-scrolling pixel world. I don't know why I'm going Wii Shop Wednesdays over this. I'm just seeing like some of the like the grid, the skill trees.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling myself go, I don't know if this one's for me.
That's too many mechanics for me, yes. I like my games to be relatively mechanically light.
There are no skill trees in this game. In Cassette Beast, not a one.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you so much for the lack of skill trees.
Amaris writes it on time for once. What's the best use of cassettes in a video game? Some examples that Amaris could think of are the Ashtray Maze, Soundwave's cassettes in War for Cybertron, and every immersive sim.
Now, not to be a hater, but I want to say, not the Ashtray Maze!
I don't like people sold the Ashtray Maze as like, oh, this is wild to me. And I got to, I was like, it's a fucking battle gauntlet. What are we doing here?
It's
really?
Like the song's cool. And like the environment's
Control
fine.
Might be the single most disappointed I've been in a game, despite the fact the game's totally fine, that I've ever been.
Yeah. The game is fine. It's nothing like, I mean, I don't like the loot stuff, but like, it's mostly just fine.
But like, I like all of the SCP stuff it's pulling from. I mostly like Remedy well enough. I liked the aesthetic vibe of like everything's like, you know, 50s CIA looking shit. And I found the game just fucking boring.
It's just so many corridors and gunfights. And then
yes.
the one set piece that's been built up the whole time is just another gunfight corridor. It's just yes. kind of a bit weird.
I was expecting something really I was expecting like, you know, the bits where Stanley Parable gets really weird with it. I was expecting something more like that and not here's like pulsating areas and enemies fighting you in a gauntlet. And I'm like, OK, that's kind of neat, I guess, but not as a thing people have talked up for like 2 years straight at this point.
Yes. Sorry to the Ashtray Maze, but yeah, not. Huge fans of that.
The Gundam Ashtray Maze.
Shut up.
Cassettes and games. I mean, it's the one at the end of Metal Gear Solid 5, obviously.
That's true. It is the one at the end of Metal Gear Solid 5.
It's like the one I can think of.
I guess Metal Gear Solid 5 is all about cassettes. If you're thinking about cassettes in video games, it's the fucking click and you're listening to Miller go on about some bullshit for 20 minutes in a briefing in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Correct.
Collecting my 80s songs.
Yep. I don't have anything better than that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel like there aren't... Like, I'm trying to think of cassettes and games, and there aren't that many. It's all, like, 80s throwback stuff now, and there weren't that many there at the time, because a lot of games are future-looking, like, in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of, like... Obviously, if you're counting all audio logs, I don't know how many of those are actually cassette tapes. There's a couple that would be modern, but I feel like I'm... They're usually, like, either old-timey stuff in Bioshock or Thief or whatever, and, future-y stuff in System Shock and modern games.
Yeah, there's MP3 files you find somewhere, yeah.
I think of, like, hacking computers as being more more foundational as the way of getting across this information.
Yeah, that's fair. I just don't think of the act of, like, using a cassette tape as, like, particularly like, interesting. I mean, I like cassettes just fine. I'm not talking shit about cassettes, but, like, it doesn't have the, like, really like low like tactility of like a reel to reel where you like scrubbing it forward and back. If you rewind a tape, it doesn't like it's not like a VHS or like a reel to reel like Immortality where like you could see something. You're not going to hear anything if you're rewinding a tape. It's just going to make the rewind noise. Tapes just aren't interesting to me in this way. I can't think of good examples of what you would do with a tape that is interesting in this way.
I mean, the thing about a tape, the interesting the wrong word, but like the thing about a tape is it, the big click it makes when you press play. That's the tape thing. And it's just kind of the one thing. It just goes, and then it's on. And I love that. You know, that's what I, when I think of tapes, I think of like weird, clunky, shitty Walkman players that would do that.
I mean, like the only answer I can think of is like horror games. You're like, you record, you have like a tape recorder where you're recording room noise, and then you play it back, and there's a voice, you know, that sort of like ghost hunting stuff. But the tape is not inherent to that. You could do that on anything. I mean, the tape is a certain era of that for sure. But I mean, what is what's the game where everyone goes ghost hunting together in multiplayer that everyone likes?
The Lethal Company, the new one.
No, the one from like 2 years ago.
Prismum, whatever.
Phasmagoria is not it.
But that one, the one with the P.
Yeah. Yeah, that I know has a thing where you're like asking ghost questions with your microphone and then you're listening back. I don't know if that has a tape recorder, but like, you know, something like that is all I can think of off the top of my head. I just don't think tapes are have like, and to be fair, CDs are much worse. There's nothing interesting about a CD, truly.
CDs are maybe the least interesting format.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, they're good. They're good at what they do, but, like, they don't have the, like, weirdness around, like, VHS noise and, like, tape hiss and none of that. It's just you put it in, it works. It's fine. There's the Revolution X where you have a gun that shoots CDs in it. That shooter, that arcade shooter from back in the day. That's all I can think of with CDs.
And the only, like, aesthetically interesting thing about CDs is, like, specifically like a CD tray when it comes out and it goes back in on the computer. That's like a fun thing to do. But no, the CDs are nothing. You just kind of put them in. But I did hate when like things got too modern and all the like cool CD trays got replaced with you just slide it in. I was like, I don't even get my tray anymore. There's nothing. And then they just went away and you're using MP3s.
Yeah. That's it for questions. Again, abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. Next time, Jackson, what are we playing?
We are playing The Forgotten City.
Yeah.
This Roman detective game.
Yeah, this is an Australian game by Modern Storyteller. It was originally like a Skyrim mod, right?
I believe so.
I bought the standalone game on my Steam Deck, so that's where I'll be playing it.
I also have it on Steam. I'll probably be trying to run it on my PC. I don't know how it'll do. It's a modern graphic-y game, but not that graphic-y, so it should be fine.
Yeah. Just continuing to play smaller games. Hopefully a little easier on Jackson's wrists and a little easier on our time than this one was, because this is one of the things we didn't talk about is the problem with indie RPGs, not a problem unless you're me and have to play Gamer Month, is that the indie RPGs are full-ass RPGs. You still gotta fucking put in the time. Well, it's not like because the game is smaller, you get a game that's 5 hours long.
Here's the thing. That's not true, because the full-ass RPGs are now 80 hours long.
Well, that's
true.
And
I just want a reset on scope in general. I don't need...
I mean, this game is well-scoped, I think, to be fair. But
yeah, this game's well-scoped, but I'm saying, in generally speaking, I don't need longer games, like, almost all the time. I watched a video that was about progression systems in games. It was the new Rasputin video. I don't forget what it's called, but if you want to go look it up. And it discussed, like, in Elden Ring, you there are a bunch of different unique rewards, but they're not all useful, so it feels pointless doing everything. But in Tears of the Kingdom, everything is like in there's like only a set number of reward pools, so nothing feels special. Where's the balance here in these video games? Is there any path? And at no point in this video, and it would drive me crazy, did he say the obvious thing, which is that all of these things are fine if the game is about a tenth of the size of Tears of the Kingdom. If you make a shorter game, you don't have to have a thing like a system that supports all these different variations. You just make a shorter game that is interesting for as long as it is lasts. And that's the solution. I've solved it.
It's called Sable, and it killed my desire to ever play a Zelda game again. So
right. I need to fucking play Sable is one of the ones I tried a bit, and I was like, I'm going to be waiting for a new PC, but I also aren't gaming enough, so I still haven't pulled the trigger on a new PC.
I mean, look,
yet.
I played that shit on my very expensive Xbox, and it ran like shit. I think it runs like shit on everything.
Well, maybe that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, shorter games. So I'm told this one's about 6 hours, so I'm hoping it's a decent time.
Yeah. All right, where can people find you?
Find me at headfallsoff on twitter.com and on co-host. You can find the podcast that we do at abnormalmapping.com. A whole bunch of other podcasts there. We just did repertory screenings.
About?
Movies. It's about movies. It's about Dark Waters, the 2019 movie. It's okay. It was not one of our better movies. We're not that bad either. I think it had a good discussion.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at @em_being. If you'd like to support our shows, you can do that at patreon.com/normalmapping. You get premium podcasts for doing so. For $1 a month, you get the Great Gundam Project. We just finished Gundam Unicorn. We're about to take off into a SD Gundam called Brave Battle Warriors, which is about like Three Kingdoms stuff. But we'll also be watching every Dragon Ball movie along with that. So if you love Goku and Friends, we're going to be talking a lot about Goku and Friends. It'll be great. We're truly going to have a great time with that one.
I'm so ready. I'm so ready for Goku and Friends.
For $5, you get Blockbusters, where every month we watch a big influential movie and talk about it. We recently had our friend Dia on to talk about Pirates of Silicon Valley. Next month, we're watching Steel Magnolias. For $10, you get VoIP Life. For every 2 weeks, we have kind of a free forum just chatting about what we've been up to. Those are often video game related. So look forward to that. If you subscribe, if not, you know, that's all right. Just please tell people that you like the show. Rate and review on iTunes. Tell your friends. Retweet the posts about the podcasts. That all helps a lot. Things that aren't necessarily in our network that I've been up to. Me and Dia are nearing the end of playing through My Summer Vacation 2. We have 2 episodes left. So by the time the next Abnormal Mapping is out, we'll be on to our next game. And that game's been really good. Excited to wind it down and move on to something else. I also have a book club with my friend Nora where we read through the Aragon books. And we're nearly done with the 4 books of the Inheritance Cycle. And then we have 2 more books that are in that universe that we'll be reading. You can check that out at exportaud.io. The Dia stuff is at Dia's YouTube channel, youtube.com/@DiaLucina. And check all that stuff out. I think Dia knows what we're doing next, but I don't want to say it in case we change our minds. But we're, I guess, continuing to dig into Japanese games because that's where Dia's head's at, if it's the thing I think it is. And if not, we'll be doing something else.
Yeah.
So.
Look forward to all of that.
Yeah, so that's everything. Thanks for listening. Come back next time where we're going to be investigating.
So true.